it's not more so that poker is bad in this case. It's that poker was the vehicle for bad doing. And that's kind of the messaging that those of us like yourself, you know, who love this industry for so long and we believe in the community and all that sort of stuff. We just got to kind of try and get that message across as best we can. Like these guys, if they wanted to cheat people out of money, they could have done anything. They just found poker and they said, you know what, we're going to do it this way. We feel like this is the best way to get these guys, you know, this is how we're going to do it, et cetera. But let's say that didn't work and they couldn't figure it out via poker. Maybe they just do it some other way.
Welcome once again to Low Rollers, a podcast where we talk about gambling, which describes literally every podcast in the world over the last 7 days, but Low Rollers was doing it before it was cool. I'm your host, Eric Raskin, senior editor of CasinoReports.com, and I have a great guest for you this week, the co-host of one of my favorite podcasts, Donnie Peters from Poker Go and the Poker Go podcast, will be joining me to give the poker industry perspective on the whole Chauncey Billups arrest and the rigged private poker game scandal that the FBI was also proud of themselves for busting last week. So my conversation with Donnie is coming up in just a few minutes. But first, my quick thoughts on some other news. Yes, there was other news in the gambling world this week. Pretty major news, actually, for the online casino industry, or maybe the online sports betting industry, or maybe both, that my former co-host Jeff Edelstein was first to report on Wednesday. You can read his story on Casino Reports, headlined, Hard Rock Bet launches new form of online sports betting in Florida that feels like slots. It seems like something happens in our industry almost daily that gets called a game changer, but this really is a game changer if it's permitted. And Hard Rock Bet seems confident that it is permitted, at least in Florida. Just last week on the pod with Captain Jack, we were talking about loopholes and how every operator or entrepreneur is searching for loopholes to offer plausibly legal gambling products. Well, Hard Rock Bet thinks it's found a loophole to allow a slots-like product, basically a product that looks and feels like online casino, in a state that has not legalized online casino. The basic details, for some people with the Hard Rock Bet app in Florida, starting Tuesday, they found a games tab with 21 titles in the lobby, and the result of a quote-unquote spin in one of these games is not determined by a random number generator, because that would make it a slot machine, but rather is determined by a past stock car race outcome, very similar to historical horse racing. For the user, the result of the spin may as well be random, but technically it is not. It is predetermined, kinda, sorta. Look, I'm not here to pass judgment on whether this aligns with the letter of the law for what is and is not allowed in Florida. Hard Rock seems confident that it is, and it may well be, but it's all very wink-wink, just like prediction markets claiming they aren't sports betting, or like DFS sites a dozen years ago claiming they weren't gambling. This is the way of the gambling world right now. You won't legalize the product we want you to legalize? Well, we'll find a different way to package that product that makes it not necessarily illegal, and we'll offer it. And like I said, game changer. Right now, online casino is legal and regulated in only 7 states. But what if a form of online casino that they call sports betting becomes available in every state where sports betting is allowed? And then, what if it's available in every state where prediction markets are allowed, which, legal challenges aside, is all 50 states? So, deep breath. Part of me is bothered by the breakneck speed at which things are moving. Part of me feels this is a natural osmosis sort of thing, where there are a lot of people who love to play casino games, and if their state won't allow it, well, it's making its way into their hands now anyway, and in the internet age, everything being everywhere is inevitable. I just wish they didn't have to insult me by calling it sports betting. I see you winking, Hard Rock Bet. And I respect the wink, by the way. In 2025, this is how the game is played. Can't really be mad at someone for playing it as hard as they can. Okay, let's get to the interview. So enjoy a few seconds of music, and when I come back, I'll be joined by Donnie Peters. There are a fair few dishonest people in the poker world, but my guest this week is not one of them, as far as I know. It is my pleasure to welcome a man who is very officially the 163rd best poker player in the world. He is the VP of marketing for Poker Go. He co-hosts the Poker Go podcast. He is Donnie Peters. Donnie, welcome to Low Rollers. Thanks for joining me on this rather interesting week in the world of poker.
Oh, yeah. I mean, interesting might be putting it lightly, but I appreciate you having me on, Eric. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. And honestly, it's been too long, sir.
Yes, it has. I'm glad we were able to do this. I'm glad poker gave us an excuse to talk in its own bizarre way. And I am also, I'm definitely going to want to hear some stories about your experience proving yourself to be the world's 163rd best poker player. But first, let's start with the big topic in the gambling world, the scandals, the arrests, specifically Chauncey Billups and mob-linked rigged private poker games. I have no idea what the chatter has been like within the hardcore poker world. From where you sit, were people caught totally off guard by this? Or is this a case of, oh yeah, everyone kind of knew about this sort of thing. There were a lot of whispers and it finally got busted.
Yeah, I mean, you hear about this stuff time and time again. I mean, not all the time, but it does pop up, or there's questions about things, I should say. It's not more so that you hear like, oh, this game is doing this stuff and this game is doing that stuff, or this guy's bad and this guy's bad. But you just kind of hear things through the grapevine. This news actually broke while we're running a pretty big series right now at the Poker Go Studio in Las Vegas. So we have a lot of those high stakes players in town who are playing, and there's been some chatter, you know, amongst them, where it's like, yeah, I kind of thought this was interesting when they offered to fly me out via a private jet. So I just avoided that sort of stuff. Thankfully, a lot of high stakes players who are professionals, you know, they always kind of get their guard up when something seems too good to be true, because oftentimes it is, as the saying goes. So, I mean, you've heard stuff over the years, you know, you just never know if it's ever going to come out, if people are actually going to get busted by authorities, or maybe it just comes out through the industry and everyone's like, hey, you know, don't go to that game or don't go to this game, or I heard this guy's bad news. But for it to come out, you know, obviously with the FBI involved and to the magnitude that it has with these names, these celebrities, you know, Chauncey Billups right there at the top of it all, you know, in terms of like the headlining name. I mean, that's big news. And unfortunately for poker, it kind of just drags the industry, which is 99.9% incredible. It just drags it through the mud, and it's in a way it's kind of sad to see.
Yeah, and actually that leads in perfectly to, you know, I know you often like to talk about good for the game versus bad for the game, and with people and incidents and results and all that sort of stuff. Is this really bad for the game, or is this more just bad for private games?
I mean, I generally subscribe to all press is good press. And right. I mean, there's ways to work the messaging here. There's ways to communicate that, listen, you know, not a lot of poker is bad. In fact, the large majority of poker is certainly on the up and up. And this isn't just the poker industry, but there's always going to be a bad apple here or there, or several bad apples in the grand scheme of things. And it seems like there was obviously some bad apples here. And it's not more so that poker is bad in this case. It's that poker was the vehicle for bad doing. And that's kind of the messaging that those of us like yourself, you know, who love this industry for so long and we believe in the community and all that sort of stuff. We just got to kind of try and get that message across as best we can. Like these guys, if they wanted to cheat people out of money, they could have done anything. Right. They just found poker and they said, you know what, we're going to do it this way. We feel like this is the best way to get these guys. You know, this is how we're going to do it, et cetera. But let's say that didn't work and they couldn't figure it out via poker. Maybe they just do it some other way. Right. You know, so it's not that poker is bad. It's that there's some bad apples who used poker as a vehicle to do bad things. And unfortunately, that does leave a little bit of a stain on the industry, yes. But generally speaking, you know, I've heard from a lot of kind of fringe poker fans that are just in my life, whether that be friends growing up that I've played home games with, family members, et cetera, kind of asking, you know, what this means, whatever. And once you kind of break it down to them, like, listen, this isn't that poker is necessarily bad. It's not, you know, poker is very good and it can do a lot of good. And, you know, there's charity tournaments and all this sort of stuff that is awesome. You know, again, these guys used poker to do something bad. It's, you know, that's just how it is. If somebody decides to, you know, drive their car through the front of a business, like, are cars bad? I mean, cars are generally pretty good, right? You know, bad right. analogy by me, but you guys can get what I'm saying here.
Right. There are all sorts of examples of the implement is not necessarily to blame. It's the people using that implement. But I guess there's sort of a possible counterpoint, even if we wanted to claim this is good for poker in some way. Could you say this is good for casino poker, that it sort of people that it makes clear that if you want to play a game that's on the up and up, go to your local casino rather than a private game?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion in recent years where large high stakes games have essentially moved out of casinos and they've gone more private, you know, for a multitude of reasons, but that's happened, right? Now it could likely very much shift back the other way. And we've kind of started to see a little bit of this even before this scandal came out, just in that a lot of major casinos these days are, you know, having kind of private high stakes rooms or areas or parlors or whatever it is where their VIP clients can come in and they can play in a very private controlled setting, you know, against whoever they want. And, you know, they can do it that way, but it's under the regulated environment. You know, there's security cameras, there's people running the games that have licenses that are regulated and all that sort of stuff. So I would imagine that's kind of the transition that's going to happen here. It's not that like a lot of these private games are now all of a sudden going to be come down to the Poker Go studio, for example, and like play on a live stream. Like, right. I don't think that's going to happen, because a lot of these high stakes VIP players, the reason why they play private is because they don't want it to be known that they're playing poker, which is fine. You know, everyone has a right to their own personal life being private. That's totally cool. But that might just shift now to casinos and kind of these high stakes rooms, these VIP rooms, et cetera, that you always knew existed and have been kind of getting a little bit more build up recently. And maybe that's the shift here.
Well, with you working in that the live stream arena with Poker Go, I'm curious, you know, has there been skepticism toward that, hesitation toward that? Because if there have been any casino poker room scandals in recent years, it's mostly had to do with some of the live stream incidents and people suspecting, you know, the Postlegate and the Robbie Jade Lujan and so forth. You know all about all of them, but did it make it harder? Does it make it harder to recruit people to play in a live stream because that has sort of infected the thinking of people that if it's live stream, I'm not sure I can trust it?
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, I think that people see a live stream production. I mean, I work for Poker Go. Maury Iskandani is the president, and he's, you know, everything he does is just pure gold. And I think that, you know, the people here in Nevada where we operate out of, they trust him everywhere from the players all the way up to the gaming control board, right? So if you have the right people in place, you're following the rules, you're following the regulations, I think people are going to generally look to live stream production games and believe that they're always going to be legit. Also, I mean, you know, like if you're going to cheat on a live stream, I mean, you're kind of just an idiot. Like it's because you're right. Likely going to get caught. It's going to get seen. Like it's very... You know, it's you'll end up on that show back in the day, Dumbest Criminals or whatever it was. Like, it's just why would you do it there? You know, so.
Right.
But again, you know, some of the stuff that's happened in the past that has happened on live streams is unfortunate. But I would liken back to what I said earlier, where that's just a couple of bad apples using poker as their vehicle to do something nefarious. And, you know, that's not right. And hopefully those people are banished from the game and they get the penalties that they deserve if they're found guilty. But you know, for the most part, I think that everyone looks at a live stream and they say, okay, like this is a legit operation. In the very least, there's going to be cameras on all the players, all the cards. So you can kind of like sniff stuff out if anything kind of sketchy is starting to happen, right? You know, if you take it further, you know, you generally these live streams take place on a casino property. That casino is regulated. There's security protocols. There's licensed staff, you know, all the bells and whistles to keep things as safe as possible. And then when it just comes down to like, if I just want to play on a live stream or not, it really is if these players just want their personal life to be out there, if they want to be known that they're playing poker, because, you know, poker still has kind of that stigma to it where people say like, oh, well, he's playing poker. He's a gambler. Well, I mean, plenty of people gamble in the stock market every day. I mean, come on.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting that stigma is still out there 20 plus years post poker boom. But I guess, yes, to an extent, it never quite goes away. The one other thing tied specifically to the Chauncey Billups scandal, that Matt Berkey clip that surfaced, him talking about this in 2023, had you seen that before? Like, did poker people know about that and just not make a big deal of it at the time, or it went totally under the radar and just resurfaced this week?
I mean, that's one of those things where you just kind of hear things here and there, you know, every so often. And you know, Matt Berkey's done an incredible job, by the way, going on various media outlets and, like, you know, trying to talk this through and really being a champion of poker. You know, he understands the same sort of thing, that there's going to be some bad apples here and there, and that's just going to have to get weeded out as we go. But, you know, you hear stuff like you heard the Only Friends podcast with Matt Berkey, and you say that, but it's also like, I hear it, but personally, I don't necessarily have access to those games or those people. So, like, how close am I to it? How real is it? Unless I know someone personally who might have got burned in one of those games, you know, is it legitimate? So it's always hard to kind of quantify it, you know, even if you do hear it from a very reputable source in Matt Berkey, who is has tapped into this industry and has been around the high stakes scene for as long as anyone. You know, he's seen it all. So it's always kind of just circle or swirled around, and it's been there. And again, you know, going back to what I said earlier, I think a lot of the top high stakes pros, they've always just had a really good idea to be able to avoid certain situations that, again, seem too good to be true. You know, it's just hard to get them as a mark, because, you know, they make their living on the other side of things, like kind of trying to pick out the soft spots at the table and whatnot. And if it kind of seems like they're being turned into the soft spot, you know, your antenna should raise up a little bit and some red flags go off.
Yeah, that was kind of the main takeaway from the Berkey clip for me, was the fact that he was just identifying his spidey sense going off. Something doesn't smell right here. So he didn't play in the game. But and so I can also then sort of understand why, if he didn't play in it, him just saying, I was invited to this game with Chauncey Billups and it seemed kind of shady, why that would be one of those clips that doesn't really register with anyone as something they should be mentally bookmarking until Chauncey Billups gets arrested 2 years later.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that, you know, there's probably a fair amount of people that got burned in these games, because they're not as tapped in as a Matt Berkey or somebody else, or they don't have that ability. They're just thinking, okay, I got invited to go play with, you know, these high profile guys. This seems like a cool opportunity, you know, and then they just go and they're naive to it all. And then, you know, maybe they get burned. So that's super unfortunate. And those people that happened to, you know, they're probably never going to play poker again, which stinks, to be honest, because of what happened there, when, again, the large majority of poker is good. And right, it's great to play, and we want the community to grow. We want to invite these people in here and meet them and all that sort of stuff. But if you have such a bad experience like that, because, again, these bad apples just took advantage of a situation, then it's probably just going to burn you for a lifetime. And that really does stink.
Yeah. So I wrote a piece this week on the biggest modern poker scandals, basically going back the last 20 years. I still think Russ Hamilton and Ultimate Bet, kind of maybe combined with Pot Ripper and Absolute Poker, that if we combine those into one scandal, I think that's the worst, worse than Full Tilt on Black Friday and worse than Mike Possel or anything else. What do you think is the worst of the modern poker scandals?
Yeah, I read that piece. Very good stuff. You know, I think everyone should go check it out. You know, it's also kind of you forget about some things as time goes on, right?
Right.
But the Russ Hamilton one is top of mind to me. And I was reading it and I was thinking to myself, you know, it's similar to when people talk about LeBron James and Michael Jordan. You know, what if social media was as big then as it is today? Could you imagine that Russ Hamilton and Ultimate Bet stuff coming out? Like, that, it would be nuts. I mean, we saw it a little bit with the stuff that happened at Hustler involving Robbie Jade Liu and Garrett Edelstein, and you know, Joey Ingram was basically live streaming for like 72 hours straight. I mean,
right.
If that stuff was coming out with the Ultimate Bet stuff, and we had even halfway of the popularity of social media these days, it would have been absolutely enormous. It would have blown every other scandal out of the water. And it still is, in my mind and in your mind too, like the biggest one. But just imagine if it had those legs. And it had the eyeballs and all that sort of stuff. So it's just, it's crazy to think about it back then. And, you know, they I mean, that thing sucked. Sorry. It was just so bad.
Yeah, it really did. That's maybe the best succinct way to sum it up, is that thing did suck, especially for Mike Mattisau and anybody else who fell victim to it. Last thing then on the topic of cheating and all that before we shift gears. Have you ever yourself been in a game where you felt like something wasn't right? Have you ever found yourself in a game where you were suspicious, either during or kind of after the fact when thinking back on it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think the large majority of any poker playing that I've done has been in a casino.
Right.
So, you know, even back when I was first starting, I remember when my friends and I like turned 18, we drove to Turnstone, you know, where you could play poker at 18. That was my first live setting. You know, home games and stuff have always just been with friends, you know, kind of early on when you're learning. And then, you know, playing now, I live here in Vegas, so it's very easy for me to just go down and play. I mean, these days, I kind of just don't like to play with friends in a weird way, because like I like to take poker serious, and I don't want to take playing with my friends serious. I want to just have fun with it. So most of my poker playing for the large time that I've ever played has just been in a casino or online. And online, you know, I mean, maybe there's stuff happening online, sure, you know, but that's also kind of, you know, it's probably not as bad as you ever think. I mean, you hear the horror stories. Obviously, we just talked about the Ross Hamilton stuff. That level of stuff, I don't think is happening in the games that I play. I do benefit from the fact that I am in Nevada here. This is one of the regulated markets for online poker in the US. So there is that trust factor, you know, when I do get on to play online, that it's just kind of built in. And maybe like worst case, it's a buddy playing at home and he's asking his friend next to him, like, what should I do in this hand? And it's like, I mean, how bad is that in terms of like what's the advantage they're gonna gain over me? So yeah. So I'm generally not too worried about it. And again, overall, like I just think that the large majority of poker games in the world are on the up and up. They just are. And like, it's bad that we get this headlining story and everyone's talking about it now, but this is not the norm, but by any means.
Right. Is not wanting to play in home games with your friends, is that more because you feel bad trying to take money from your friends, or because they just don't take it seriously and it's too much socializing and the game's not moving because they're telling stories all the time when it's their turn to act? Is it a combination of both? Because for me personally, I don't mind taking my friends' money because we play for such low stakes, but I do get annoyed by that guy at the table who's not taking it as seriously as I am, and it's his turn to act and he wastes 5 minutes while the clock's ticking down telling some story. That's me. I don't know which it is with you.
Yeah, I hate to lose, first of all. So
okay.
I hate to lose. So then if I'm going to lose, or if I'm going to try and avoid losing, I should say, then I'm going to take something very seriously, which I don't necessarily think is the place to go, like, hang out with my friends and, like, be non-social. And then if I am, like, being social, hanging out, laughing, whatever, then I'm probably not really paying attention to the poker, and then I'm losing money, and then I'm annoyed at myself there. So I've just decided, you know what, I'm just not going to do this anymore.
Right. It's kind of a lose-lose. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Shifting gears. I think I told you this privately or I tweeted it or something, but your Poker Go podcast all summer with Tim Duckworth, you served as my connection to the game during the WSOP. But then when the two of you guys went on your runs, I just felt so invested. Those were must listen podcasts. A few months later, looking back, is it possible to put that experience into words? Do you feel like you were able to fully appreciate it as it was going on? Or was it just kind of like so caught up in the whirlwind that you couldn't fully appreciate it? I guess I'm throwing a bunch of not necessarily related questions at you at once, but what's on your mind thinking back on it a few months later?
Yeah, I would definitely say that throughout the duration of the run, I definitely did not, I guess I can say I didn't enjoy it in the moment, but not like in a bad way. I know that might sound bad, but I was just so focused every single day. And you know, I follow a lot of different poker people, and I try and glean like the best things that I can from different people. And Patrick Leonard would always say, the only thing that you can control is trying to play the next hand as perfectly as you can. So that was literally just my focus. This entire tournament was like, Doesn't matter what happened the last hand. It doesn't matter what might happen in 10 hands. It's this next hand. Okay, how many big blinds do I have? What's the situation? And what can I do to just play this next hand as perfectly as possible? And because I was like so focused in that, I don't know, I just didn't really enjoy it. Like, in a sense that I was like getting myself hyped up or getting, you know, overexcited or anything. Even something like, sometimes when I go play poker, I turn music on when I'm like driving down to the casino. And I have found that if I put music on that I enjoy, that gets me kind of pumped up. And this goes back to my days playing soccer. You know, I used to do the same thing, but it's kind of different going to play soccer versus going to play poker. Poker, you just want to kind of be calm, cool, collected, focused, you know, all that sort of stuff. Soccer, you know, you might have to run around like a bat out of hell, be physical, like all this sort of stuff. So it's kind of good to get amped up in that arena versus poker. I found myself almost getting too amped up at times to go into a tournament, and then that might mess with me in the tournament. So I cut off like music like during this run for one thing. And I was just listening to podcasts, mostly like the Bill Simmons podcast, which is my favorite podcast. Like I would just throw that on to and from driving, like not try and get too amped up, not trying, like, if I bag chips that night, be like, okay, I'm making it to day three. Okay, we're in the money. Like, okay, like I just tried to not let that stuff get to me. And I think that even though I may not have exactly enjoyed it in the moment and like felt everything, I definitely think it helped me go through it all and like just helped me again be focused for every single hand. I did an interview, I can't remember exactly who I did it with, but I kind of joked that I kind of feel dead inside in a way. But I think that that's good. And coming out of it, you know, I talked with a lot of the kind of high stakes players that frequent the Poker Girl Studio that I know pretty well. And, you know, they congratulated me on the run and whatever. And they asked me how it was, just like you did. And I told them kind of the same thing. And they all said, like, but that's what it takes. Like, you have to just be locked in like that. You can't, once you start thinking like, oh my gosh, like we're 20 spots off the money. Oh my gosh, I have a chance to win this much money. Oh my gosh, I have a chance to make it on TV and play the final table. You get out of the zone of where you need to be. And that is, again, just every hand, just trying to play it as much as possible. Now, many months later, you know, just the other day, honestly, I pulled up, because I sell some action to some friends and whatever, I pulled up the sweat thread and I read through it. And I like, then it was like coming back to me. And I was like, okay, this is like cool, right? And right after you bust out of the main event, I mean, it's a dump like you just cannot experience. You're playing for so long. The days are grueling. I know people out there might not think that poker is the most taxing thing on you, but it is emotionally and mentally draining like none other. I mean, I would come home at night and I would just have to basically sit on my couch for 90 minutes and like just before I could go to bed, because you're still like rushing with adrenaline. And even you're trying to, on one hand, you're like, you feel it all, right? But then you're also trying to suppress it as it goes. So it's a very kind of weird mix of all these different emotions and feelings all at once. And then you bust out and it's just done. And it just dumps out. And it's just like, well, what the heck am I going to do with my life now? I just played like 6 days of a poker tournament every single day for 12 hours, just, you know, ignoring my family, ignoring everything. And the only thing that I did was I played the tournament. And then I would do the podcast. That was literally my day. I would wake up in the morning. I would do some stuff with work that I had to do for maybe an hour or two, which also helped because in the morning I wasn't like thinking about the tournament ahead. I was like, okay, I need to like do these emails. I need to do this, and you know, set it all up for the day. Fine. Then I'll go play. I'll focus. And then afterwards it was like, just talk about the poker. So, and maybe, you know, now that I think about it a little bit more, maybe the podcast after the fact every day also helped me like kind of just dump it all out,
right?
You know, and then get back home and be able to, you know, get to bed a little bit sooner, get a better night's rest, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I mean, looking back on it now, it was a tremendous experience to have. I'm happy I had it. I am hungry as all hell to try and get back there again and try and get 162 instead of 163,
right?
And it wasn't until that day six, I mean, you know, you've been to the either the Rio, you've been to Horseshoe, whatever, you know how it all just kind of condenses down to the rooms. And I remember another thing taking from Patrick Leonard, another thing that I do is I always try and stand up after I play under the gun. I play my under the gun hand, then I stand up knowing that the big blind, the small blind, and the button, the next three actions are going to be like my most active hands, when I'm likely to play the most hands. So I kind of just want to get stand up because you're sitting for a really long time, you know, so you just want to like stretch out a little bit, stretch the legs, stand up, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I remember standing up at one point in the first level, and all the tables were in like one section, like right in front of the TV area. And I looked at the clock and there was 195 people left or something. And I said, wow, like 9 people are going to make that final table. That's right there. I basically have a 1 in 20 shot. Like, I mean, it's fucking real now. It's like, I was like, okay, like now it's go time. Like now we got to make it happen. Like, you know, now it's like you dream to just have the shot, and I got the shot, and, you know, ultimately it fell apart, you know, but that's the game. But like just having that shot was the most incredible thing in the world. I tell all my friends whenever I sell action, you know, sometimes they're like, well, I didn't want to ask you if I could buy a piece and whatever. I'm like, half of the best part of it all is having people along for the ride with you. Your family, your friends, they're invested in you. You're just like, you're shooting them hands. You're giving them updates. Like, you're like, I just sucked out. I'm so lucky. Like, everyone's going nuts in the chats. Like, it's, and like, I was just reading through all that the other day and just like, man, I need to now improve so that I can hopefully make it back there in the future and hopefully make it happen again. So yeah, it was simply incredible. I didn't really feel it in the moment, but I think that helped me do better. And now I'm just like, wow, it was awesome to have it, but I want more. It's like a drug. It really is.
Right. Well, hearing you explain all that and then the part there at the end, day 6, looking at how many people were left or whatever, clearly that was your downfall, that you finally started to dream about making the final table. And do you think you, to any degree, you actually maybe lost that incredible focus a little bit that day? Or did the cards just turn against you on that day and you didn't have enough chips
just turned against me. I mean, I got my money in incredibly good, not to tell a bad beat story, but that was that. and yeah, I mean, I've also had that thought too afterwards. I'm human. I'm not a Stephen Chidwick, a Jason Kuhn, these guys who can just be total robots out there.
Right.
And I did, you know, when I kind of felt myself starting to be like, okay, this is real. We're all in this section. I basically have a 1 in 20 shot. I was like, okay, I need to refocus. Like I can't let this, like, now every hour you go, like, it just gets more real. And now is not the time to screw this up. So like, so yeah, I quickly kind of just, you know, reset myself. Just, you know, did some breathing, some standing up, walking around, whatever. And then you sit back down and you just try and lock in. And, you know, I don't play sports anymore, but I grew up my whole life playing sports. And it was, I know people will joke and they'll make fun of poker is not a sport and whatever. And I'll be the first to tell you that poker is not a sport, but you can definitely glean a lot of competitive aspects and instincts from playing sports. Like playing my whole life, you had to lock in, you had to be focused, you had to be completely dialed. All that sort of stuff. So it's the same thing at a poker table, and you see that same sort of stuff from the best players in the world. And you know, they're not on their phone in between hands. They try and eat healthy. They do silly things like they stand up every rotation around the table just to keep the blood flowing a little bit, you know, all that sort of stuff. And it's not that one thing here or there is going to make you like a world-class player or give you a run, and I'm far from it, but you just hope to stack all these things on top of each other. And then at the end of the day, if you get the cards that you can get and luck falls your way, I mean, you're at the top of the mountain.
All right. Well, bringing it all together then with a final quick topic, you mentioned what is and is not a sport. You mentioned Bill Simmons. Got to get your take on your Patriots. Are they going to win the AFC East this year? What odds would I need to give you to make it a good bet for them to finish ahead of the Bills and win the division?
Well, I have a big bet on the Bills to win the division. So I'm kind of
emotional hedge.
Kind of annoyed right now. I mean, listen, they're playing great. The quarterback Drake May is playing awesome. You know, I kind of came into the season talking with some of my friends about how even Mike Vrabel just being there as a new head coach, you know, getting kind of the right staff involved. It's like, okay, now they have adults in the room who have experience doing this sort of thing. Now, is that going to mean they're going to be a Super Bowl contender? Who knows? But it can't be worse than last year. It just can't.
Right.
And then hopefully you get some good play from some of these players. You know, you get Will Campbell out of the draft. Hopefully he, you know, pans out. Hopefully Drake May, you know, ends up taking that year 2 jump, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, it works out. So I think they're good. I just, they've had a really, really easy schedule. I mean, holy crap, this thing is unbelievable. Yeah. So, but, you know, who knows? Maybe that schedule allows them to win the division, become one of the higher seeds in the conference, and go from there. All in all, you know, I don't think, like, I'm not going to sit here and say the Patriots are going to be a Super Bowl contender or anything like that. I think they certainly have proven that they're going to be a playoff team. They're going to be a bit frisky when they get to the playoffs. And then I think it's something where you kind of come out of it and you say, okay, we gained a lot of confidence this year. We see what we can do. Now maybe we kind of put some more high-powered building blocks around us. Maybe go get like a true number one receiver, maybe beef up the offensive line and that sort of thing. Just get some better defenders, whatever. And then next year, like, they're really humming, right? So that's kind of the goal here. But, I mean, you do see it nowadays across all sports, not just, you know, the NFL, where – these young players, whether it be quarterbacks, you're seeing it right now in the NBA with Victor Wembanyama. Like, they seem to just, and this is a Bill Simmons thing, they seem to hit their peak or like get there sooner than you expect. You're like, oh, okay, like year five, year six, like they're going to be good there. No, Drake May is balling out year two, like easily one of the best quarterbacks in the league for sure. And like, maybe they thought, okay, like we'll take some steps in the right direction. We'll fix some of his mistakes from last year. And then year three, year four, that's when we go for it. But it's like right now, it seems like they should be going for it because he's playing that well.
Yeah. I'm just so happy for you and all of the other long-suffering Patriots fans that, you know, you had like three whole years without a superstar quarterback. That drought, though, appears to be over. So I'm very happy.
Well, I'll say that I'm less of a Patriots fan now than I once was. I definitely realized that I was more of a Tom Brady fan than a Patriots fan.
Okay.
But maybe now I'm going to become a Drake May fan.
You just weren't a big Mac Jones fan, I guess, is what we're learning here.
I always thought like Mac Jones, and I think you're seeing it now where he's come in for Brock Purdy. You know, not that Mac Jones is going to beat Patrick Mahomes. Like, I'll be the first to tell you that. But I think he could be serviceable with the right group around him. And he had nothing to work with. Bill Belichick was out the door. Like, he was like not even trying. Like, you know, the offensive line was crap. So like, if you put these quarterbacks in these bad positions, yeah, you're going to have the unicorns like the Mahomes, the Josh Allens, what, you know, those guys where it doesn't really matter the environment, they're going to excel. But the large majority of the quarterbacks, I know we always look at the quarterback, but there's so many people on the field. So many things have to go right. Everyone's got to be doing their right thing. You know, and again, I think that's what you're seeing a little bit with Mac Jones in San Francisco is that he's just in a better situation. And it's not that he's lighting the world on fire out there, but he can clearly win some games. He can play the position, you know, so he's probably a middle of the road quarterback, which can get the job done in the NFL on a lot of weeks. So, yeah.
Yeah, but it seems you've got yourself, assuming you are still sort of a Patriots fan, seems you've got yourself a more than middle of the road quarterback. But we shall see. It's still early in his career and early in the season. I certainly recommend to everyone listening that they subscribe to the Poker Go podcast, especially once the WSOP starts, but all year round, really. They can go to pokergo.com to subscribe to the network, at Donnie_Peters on Twitter. I refuse to call it X, it's Twitter.
Don't worry about it.
anywhere else that we should be directing people to keep up with you?
I mean, mainly Twitter. I'm on Instagram as well. Don't post as much there these days, but I'm always lurking. That's just Donnie Peters, no underscore. The best thing, you know, and like when you reached out to me to hop on here, and again, thank you for the opportunity. I love podcasts. I think podcasts need to be bigger than they are. You know, I think that there's just kind of a discoverability issue with podcasts, which is kind of one reason why a lot of podcasters have done video, because once you're on YouTube, you get into the algorithm and it just helps you get discovered more. Yeah, listen to my podcast, people, is basically what I'm trying to say. You know, that would the best thing in the world, because the podcast is the most fun thing that I do, whether it be talking football, whether it be talking poker, whatever it is. I love podcasting, love to meet podcast listeners. So it's a true pleasure to be on here and be talking with a fellow podcaster and yourself.
Well, yeah, it was my pleasure to have you, Donnie. And whether you top your 163rd place finish next year or not, I think the Poker Go podcast will certainly deliver again next year during the series, whether we're sweating you or not. But thanks so much for coming on Low Rollers. Always great catching up with you.
Thank you, Eric. I appreciate it.
Okay, my thanks again to Donnie. Seriously, if you're even a little bit into poker, subscribe to the Poker Go podcast, especially during the WSOP. All right, you know I like to close with a quick gambling story, and boy, do I have a fun one this week. I think the best thing to do to set it up is just to replay a clip from last week when I used this segment to put together a stupid four-leg parlay for the Sports Equinox. So this is from last Thursday morning, 4 days before all these games were played. Let's have some fun. Let's build the official Low Rollers Equinox parlay right now. And the books don't have lines up for any of these games yet, except the Monday night NFL game. So, you know, we'll figure out the numbers later. Also, gotta note, this is not really any kind of sound, smart betting advice. I am sure it will be a significant minus EV play, but, you know, for entertainment purposes only. In the Chiefs-Commanders game, let's take the over on Rashee Rice receptions, over 6.5, which is plus money for now. It'll be game 3 of the World Series. Should be a nice warm night at Dodger Stadium. We know nothing at this point about what the score in the series will be. Someone could be up 2-0, could be 1-1, but ignoring all that, Freddie Freeman has been quiet this postseason, and it feels like that just can't last. So let's do a Freddie Freeman homer. NBA, lots of games to choose from. I'm focusing in on Nets at Rockets. Nets on the end of a road back-to-back. It'll be their third game in 4 days. Rockets will have had 2 days off. I'm sure the line will favor the Rockets by a lot. I don't care. Rockets to cover whatever the line is. NHL, I don't know crap about the NHL these days, but only two games to choose from. My daughter is in college in Pittsburgh. The Penguins are home against the Blues, so Penguins on the puck line. Why the hell not? So there's your official Low Roller Sports Equinox parlay. I will place it Monday and find out what the final price is. Everyone else, you know, join in on the fun. Put a dollar on it. Let's celebrate the Sports Equinox in style, in true Low Rollers fashion, at small stakes and based on wildly uninformed sports takes. So that was the bet, and I did indeed place it on Monday, and I shared it on Twitter in hopes that my many, many fans would place it too. I got it at plus 2605 odds at DraftKings. I didn't really shop around at all, I must shamefully admit. Now, a relevant side story. I started coming down with a bad cold last Sunday. Felt like crap. My sleep schedule was off. I worked most of the day Monday, but felt lousy. Monday night rolls around. I'm in bed by 9 o'clock. I'm watching Chiefs Commanders on my phone, keeping an eye on various other scores. I kind of hang in there until about 10:30, at which point the Penguins had won their game, not just covered the puck line at plus 1.5 goals, but won outright, and the Rockets were crushing the Nets. The spread was 15.5, and they were up by almost 30 late in the fourth, so that felt pretty safe, and indeed, they won by 28. Rashee Rice only had 3 receptions at half. He needed 7, but on a scoring drive in the third quarter, when I was still watching, he got 2 more, so he was up to 5. I was looking pretty decent there. And the World Series game, I forget what inning it was, but Freeman hadn't done much of anything yet. Maybe it was like the 5th or 6th inning, but I was sick. I was exhausted. I went to sleep. But again, my sleep schedule is off. I'm all screwed up. And at like 2:30 a.m., I wake up. Try to fall back to sleep. It isn't happening, so finally I give up, and at 2:52 a.m., I check my phone, and holy crap, my DraftKings account is higher than I left it. The Low Rollers Sports Equinox Parlay must have hit. I go on Twitter, and it is populating with clips of a Freddie Freeman home run hit literally 1 minute earlier. So it turns out I decided to look at my phone in the middle of the night at the exact moment my bet was being graded a winner. I don't know. It was just weird. There was a higher power at play here, clearly. But the bet would have lost if not for the World Series game going 18 innings and Freddie Freeman getting 9 chances to hit a homer. And finally, he did. I won. I hope some of you listening came along for the ride and won too. And I hope someone out there bet more on it than I did. For you see, I am the ultimate low roller. I bet $1. And I won $26.05. Look, when you lose, it's great to be a low roller. But when you stumble into a miracle 26-1 win, it sucks to be a low roller. It doesn't even feel like a win, and mostly you're just left with pain and regret, even in victory. And on that uplifting note, until next week, this has been Low Rollers, Small Stakes, and Hot Takes.